It's trusting God with our family. I always wanted to think that we'd have a normal family. Yeah, I know. This was because we grew up in a Christian family, which is all very well, but it was a bit weird, to be honest. What we actually got was far more than what I could... What I actually got was far from what I would call normal at the time. We've got two children, Jessica, who's 14, and Thomas, who's 11, is nearly 12, counting the days down till his 12th birthday. 7 years ago, Jessica was diagnosed with diabetes, which was a bit of a shock. And to be honest, it was a bit of a wake-up call. I guess we'd tried to do a lot of stuff on our own up until this point, and I think that we cut out God from a large part of our lives. We were okay, but we still came to church. I could not say God's name for months. I just felt spiritually numb, and I can't really explain it. I just went through the motions of life and the bottom of fallout of our perfect family. Before Jess was diagnosed, we'd already decided to go to Grapevine in August later that year, and we'd felt that we'd let our kids down by not encouraging them in godly pursuits, having missed out Grapevine for the last 6 years. By the time Grapevine came around, we really didn't want to go. Twice during the night, Jessica's blood sugar had dropped so low, we found her unconscious and fitting. And to be honest, I don't remember blaming God for Jessica's diabetes at all. It's just that I couldn't talk to him. And God felt a million miles away, and it felt like the gap between me and God was just too wide, and he just couldn't mend this. I'd never felt so lost in my life. All I can say is that by the time Grapevine came around, my heart had changed. I think we got used to the idea of having to live with diabetes, although we're not finding it easy. The fear of death played a big part in my thoughts, and I don't remember much else at the time. All I can remember from that Grapevine were the words of the delirious song, "Your grace has found me, just as I am, empty-handed, but alive in your hands." I hadn't even thought to take my Bible, and I remember being so hungry to read it, I couldn't wait to get home to hold my Bible in my hands. I just knew that I'd found God, and he wanted to be part of our lives again. With a new love for God, I found myself asking God to get us through this, praying for healing I still found difficult. And God gave us this verse, which is Deuteronomy 31, verse 6. It says, "Be strong and courageous. Do not be afraid because of them, for the Lord your God goes with you, and he'll never leave you or forsake you," because it was a really lonely place at that time as well. You would think that things got easier, but fear set in. And as we became of the future complications, worry was just lying below the surface. But we were discovering how to apply God's word to our lives. And there's a couple of verses here. One was Psalm 94, verse 22. "The Lord has become my fortress and my God, the rock in whom I take refuge." And it was the whole of Psalm 34. But verse 7 was, "The angel of the Lord encamps around those who fear him, and he delivers them." And I used to read those in Jessica's bedroom and ours. Really scary times. I would love to say that we're instantly delivered from fear of the future, but I particularly had lots of sleepless nights listening for unusual breathing noises from the next room. Adrian, when I was stood worshiping, it's about Thomas. The women prayed for Thomas. They prayed for Thomas when he was born during the birth, and for a while after Thomas's birth, I actually blamed people not praying. I just wanted to say sorry for the women who prayed, because I think that was me actually. That was nothing to do with God. I think it was just it was an escape route for me. So I just wanted to say sorry for that. So when Tom was born, he'd been starved of oxygen for a period of time. And I almost never wanted him to grow up because of the fear of the future. By the time he was 2, I was afraid that I could see that it's something wrong with him. I couldn't say why there was something wrong or even what was wrong. I just felt that things were not right. He was not slow to walk or talk or anything. He did as a baby. He did everything as a baby just as fast as Jess had done. I didn't even tell John how I felt. I was waiting for somebody to tell me there was a problem, and I was too afraid to broach the subject to anyone. It was when Tom was six that his teacher said at parents' evening that there may be a problem. She thought Tom might be autistic. To be honest, this was a relief, and we could move on now. We had a quick diagnosis of Asperger's syndrome and accessed help really fast. This time, things were different, and we asked God for help, and we got on with it. I couldn't find it because it's in a box somewhere, but Adrian, before Thomas was born, gave me a word for Thomas, which was that he'd be the life and soul of the party, it'd be fun, and he'd bring your family together, and it'd be something really special and really different. It was exactly how Thomas is. We just felt that God gave us this verse for our family in Psalm 20, verse 7. And it says, "Some trust in chariots and some in horses, but we trust in the name of the Lord our God." And I put this verse up where we could see it. And I know it's a bit odd, but I just felt that I could see people around us trusting in stuff and everything they could see, but we were trusting in something that you couldn't see. And that's why it felt special to us at the time and now. I can honestly say that we've been trusting God for both our children. When the rug gets pulled from under your feet, you still stand, and we're still standing. We really felt that God was on our case and helping us to deal with both of our children's problems. Medicine can only do so much, but God can do so much more. By the time Thomas was seven, he could not read and write very well at all. His sentences were so bad, you couldn't tell what he'd written. We felt that God has said he would put a light on and things would change. It's been a very slow process, but things are changing. It has been heartbreaking getting little or no help in school, but despite this, Tom is reading and writing. Some of this has only taken place in the last few months. We'd asked God to equip him for change to comprehensive school. The verse I felt God had given us for this period for Tom was Jeremiah 29, verse 11. It's, "For I know the plans I have for you, declares the Lord, plans to prosper you and not to harm you, and plans to give you hope and a future." Although we have acquired skills to deal with Tom's behaviour, we believe that God has changed Tom so that it is acceptable to other people as well. You get to a point where you can't do any more for yourself and you have to rely on God. We've been teaching Tom to trust in God for himself, and I don't think that we were actually prepared for what actually happened to him. Because of Tom's condition, if you tell him something is going to happen, it just has to happen. It's as simple as that, and woe betide you if it doesn't. So he expects God to do things that he asks. We've been reading to him Matthew chapter 4, and don't worry in trusting God, about his first few days at school. And this has been related to starting comprehensive school. Changing school for Tom should have been traumatic. He's been so peaceful over the summer, we've never known anything like it. He's been so much easier to handle, even helpful and funny. He's asked God for friends, he has friends. All sorts of school stuff, and God turns up for him right on time. It's been truly amazing. 2 weeks ago, we went to the orthodontist with him, and the dentist had said he needed to wear a brace. He had too many teeth, and to be honest, Tom's never really had bad teeth, but I just thought that if the dentist had said he needed a brace, he must need one. I knew that this would be too traumatic for him, though. And the night before the appointment, Tom asked me, "Can we ask God that I don't get a brace tomorrow?" I asked him to open his mouth just to see if I thought God could do it or not. No chance. His top teeth were overlapping a little in a few places, so I thought it may warrant a brace anyway. So I prayed something very vague, and I purposely didn't pray that he wouldn't have to have a brace. I didn't trust God, basically. The next day, he was very anxious and nervous, and he was suffering from high anxiety. And I was more than happy to pray for that. It's fine. The orthodontist sat him down in the chair and looked into his mouth and took one look at me and said, Did your dentist say why he needed a brace? Because I can't see any problem. His teeth are fine, apart from the small film star gap in the middle. What's my place? And she asked me to go and have a look. I looked into his mouth, and I couldn't believe it. His teeth were not overlapping at all. They were like the night before. They were not overlapping like they were the night before. As we were leaving, Tom said to me, "You didn't ask God, but I did." And that sort of showed me. This taught me a valuable lesson in trusting God. I can't see the future, and I'm sometimes nervous about asking for the seemingly impossible. I've been teaching Tom Matthew 7, verse 7 and 8. Ask and it will be given to you. Seek and you will find. Knock and the door will be opened to you. For everyone who asks receives, and who seeks finds, and to him who knocks the door will be opened. It'd been trusting God, and God had been giving more than a few times just lately, but I had really not been listening. I have to say sorry to God, but I've found that he has given me a new confidence in asking. We're trusting God for our family. Without God, there's nothing. It's not easy, but we take each day as it comes. And I just couldn't imagine living without God's help in our lives.
I can't follow that one. I've got some notes, so but Ruth said that I normally ad lib, so I can remember when when you think about getting married, you get married, your first kiss, and then you're expecting your first baby. Birth goes to plan, everything's hunky dory, the feeds are fantastic, you get massive sleep nights and everything like that. And I put in here, in brackets, cloud cuckoo land, because it never works like that. We actually thought that we had problems when we first got married. We were trying for some time for children. I can remember walking around St. Ives in Cornwall, and Ruth phoned her mum just to say hi and all this, that and the other. And Ruth's mum told Ruth that brother's wife was expecting their first baby. We went down the pan. How dare they get pregnant first? But different plans for different people. When you do have children, you want them totally perfect, and my two are perfect in my eyes and God's eyes. But when you're told that when your 7-year-old daughter is type 1 diabetic, inside, Ruth held him more than me. My inside fell apart. My defence was denial. I didn't want to have diabetes because the job that I was in gave me too much knowledge of complications. But I went through such a guilty spell because it was 2 or 3 weeks leading up to Jess's diagnosis that I completely missed all the signs and symptoms. I can diagnose it in other people, but not my own daughter. And I went through a really bad guilt patch. But I don't think I ever shared that with Ruth. Not long after Jess was diagnosed, I got a 3/9 course for a 16-year-old diabetic girl that wasn't breathing. Got there, did the job that I was trained to do. But a tsunami of fear enveloped my life because I thought this could be Jess. And I had to go downstairs and tell the parents that there's nothing that I could have done to save her. And it was the first time that I shared that with Ruth over the weekend in Derbyshire. Because I've had to live with that for 7 years. Sorry, my eyesight's gone blurry now. Old age. Anyway, at that point, as Ruth has already shared, we were just churchgoers. We weren't close with God. Or I wasn't close with God. I didn't have anyone to blame. Sorry. Grapevine changed that year that we went. We found God again and gave us the song tonight, the thirsty soul, the thirsty heart. You know, it's so true. I was so dry that I needed God more and more. We put trust in in man, really. Put trust in the doctors and the medical profession. Put trust in the teachers as she went up to National. She went. I can remember she went on a weekend to get to know the teachers. It was up at Wellesby Scout Camp. And we was promised the earth. She would be looked after. She'd have a contact teacher, all this, that, and the other. And when she came back, she ended up in hospital because they hadn't done anything. I was angry with the school because they lied, basically, to us. But I knew then, and it became stronger, that I needed to trust God more. I actually didn't pray before she went away, so that was my fault. And then Tom was born. Ruth, as she shared, she didn't share anything of her feelings and her thoughts before then. It was at, again, when the teacher sat us down, and she was so nervous, it was unbelievable, that she left us till last, because she didn't know how to approach us. And when she told us, it was just such a weight off our shoulders, because someone had actually recognised what Ruth had originally recognised, and we could move forward and get the diagnosis. But during the diagnosis, I sat listening to the doctor's questions, and I could see my own child there. Things that Tom had done with toys, I used to. And I said to Ruth, I came out the meeting, I said to Ruth, I wonder if I was autistic but never diagnosed. And then I had to start looking at what God has done through my life and in my life, and where I've come from. Charles Slagle, I can remember when I first started with his church, he said to me, God is telling me that he's been on my case since I've been in my mother's womb. And I truly believe that now. And God gave me Ephesians 1, and the chapter is so fantastic, that he loved me so much before the foundations of this earth was built. And I believe that for my two children, for Jess and Tom, that he has got a plan for them. He is going to move them forward. I was looking at the story of Genesis 22 and Isaac and Abraham, how Abraham felt when God said, I want to sacrifice your son as a burnt offering to me. And it doesn't really go into how Abraham was feeling. I think I'd be absolutely gutted. You know, you promised me a son, and now you want me to give him over and kill him and burn him to worship you. But Abraham trusted God. He trusted him implicitly that he was prepared to do it. And every time God said, Abraham, Abraham said, here I am. It was that positive move forward to say, God, here I am, and I trust you 100%. And I trust God with my children now 100%, with my family 100%. Sorry, I'm completely lost. I'm okay now. I'm on a roll now. but it's this. Yes, we can trust God, but we can't sit back and trust God. You know, we've got to keep saying, God, I put this into your hands. I trust you with it, but move forward with it. It's this journey that we've been through our own lives. And we both, Ruth and I said, we don't want sympathy tonight. We want to share of just a picture and a chapter of our lives to encourage you. If you're going through and anything that's hard, just give it over to God, and just do it. Don't argue with it. Just do it. The other thing is Romans 8, verse 31. What then shall we say in response to this? If God is for us, who can be against us? And that is so true. He set a plan out for our lives. I've got to hand over my two kids, and the dedication, we did that. And at the time, I didn't really know why we were doing it, but I do now. You know, my two kids are a gift from God. They're with Ruth and I for a time until they move on to their next chapter, and it's humbling, really, to be able to do that. Because when you got kids, you don't get an instruction manual like everything with the washing machine and things like that. But I've found that this is the best instruction manual that you can have for your kids. It's not just a health thing, you know. It's the moral things. It's when they move on to married life, onto university, onto jobs. It's how they run their lives. I can remember Tony Pullin saying last week, look at your big brother in church, see how they're doing things. And I can remember Graham saying a few weeks back with when Jesus said to Simon, go and cast your nets the other side. And Simon said, oh, no, you know, we've just been out. But Simon turned around and said, I'll do it because you said so. And I think it's got to be encouraging for everyone. So that's just a bit of our trusting God with our family.